everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I am finished touring with the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, so normal service has resumed here at Inside the Ropes. So I've called in the big guns, the big hitter, the man with a plan, the man that he's got the face that runs the place. He's Inside the Ropes is the house that he built in the last year. It's Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, very well. And you'll get that Inside the Ropes is the house that Finley built joke when you listen to our awards.
I just
want to mention that. You'll get that joke then.
Yeah, and go over to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes where you can listen to the 45-minute long Power Slam Awards, where we look at some of the best and the worst of 2017, which I think you would agree was a rocking good time.
It absolutely was, yeah, it was, absolutely it was, yeah. And, Kenny, a nice segue, I had a rocking good time at the Shawn Michaels show on, Wednesday night in Manchester.
It was, I mean, you should be remembering those nights more than me. The week's been a blur for me, but yeah, it was Wednesday night in Manchester at the Comedy Store. We had Shawn Michaels brought over, and, you know, I love Manchester because it's such a great atmosphere. Like, the thing is that whenever we do shows, like, no offense to anybody who's like, if you're listening to this, you're probably not one of these people, but when we did the shows in London, there's just, I kind of wish in London I could give everyone like 5 lines of coke before we start, because they're just very subdued through most things. But in Manchester and Glasgow, the crowd are very up for it, and, you know, they'll happily, you know, laugh along and clap and, you know, make noise. So Manchester was no different on Wednesday, and I thought Shawn, you know, we were supposed to go 90 minutes and we went over and we almost went 2 hours, and I thought Shawn was quite brutally open about his career and kind of refreshing way. And you were there, so, you know, you're not going to blow smoke unless you thought it was good. You said you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed his comments about the Bret Hart feud in 1997 and all the things that were going on backstage. And it was really just all chimed with everything that I'd sort of heard at the time. And there was some new stuff as well. And I really enjoyed that. And then he was talking about, you know, what happened prior to WrestleMania 14 and his behavior there and the famous Undertaker story. You know, he was always called the conscience of the WWF after that, wasn't he, the Undertaker? And apparently the Undertaker was there taping his fists and was going to beat Shawn Michaels up if he didn't go out there and drop the title to Steve Austin. And Shawn's comments about that were fascinating. He went into great detail and very plausible, and you got in a great crack there, Kenny. I'm going to spoil it for you. You got a little joke in there at the at the expense of someone, didn't you? About the something that was said in 1997 on Raw. Do you remember that, Kenny?
I'm trying to remember exactly what he was saying. But he was talking about Bret. And he was talking about the arrival in 97. And then I just kind of, like, I thought it was under my breath, kind of said, yeah, he's had a lot of sunny days, didn't he? And everybody just kind of went, ooh. But Michaels hadn't heard it, so he turned around and he was like, what? And I said it, and then I said, you know, I said that Bret had some sunny days, and he was cackling away at that.
Yeah.
So yeah, good sense of humour, which I was happy about.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and there was his ego was definitely in check, which obviously 20 years ago it really wasn't, and he freely admits that now. And there was just no, it didn't seem to be any bitterness at all. He just seemed to be, you know, he made a point at the end, didn't he, of thanking the audience. And oftentimes with wrestlers, you'll see through it and you think, oh, that's just, they're just saying that because they want your money and everything. And he was actually freely admitting, listen, we're absolutely dependent upon you guys for keeping us going. And thanks so much, because your support for this system enables us to continue doing this for a living. And he just seemed to be so grateful for that, and after, you know, being in the business for well over 30 years, he didn't seem to take it for granted either. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I mean, yeah, I thought he came across so well. He talks so, you actually had an easy night, Kenny. You didn't really have to do that much, did you?
No, you know, it's funny because so every night was different, and one of the things I was very aware of was, you know, that every show should feel a little bit different and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, if people think that my job is easy, then I've kind of done my job well.
Yeah.
Because the most difficult thing is when you've got a guy like Shawn Michaels who's got a 30-year career and you need to whittle down the conversation to 90 minutes. It's so difficult. And then, you know, there's like Montreal and stuff like that. He's talked about it a million times.
Yes.
And I just don't think there's any value in me going over all this old ground. So I was bringing up stuff that I thought was more interesting. Like, when did he begin to get frustrated with Bret Hart? On his side. Not on Bret's side, on his. What did he think of China as part of DX and how important she was? The story about Undertaker taping the fist. Did it happen? All these things that, to me, I haven't heard them talk about long form or in front of an audience. And I just thought it was interesting. And I thought that he... I'm not gonna blow smoke. Like, he, Shawn Michaels is just, he's always been the best human ever. He knows he was a dick in the 90s. He knows he was, but I think he owns up to enough of the stuff. And he, I can't remember what show it was. I think he said it in London, but it might have been Manchester. And he said, "Listen, I am more than happy to put my hands up and say I did stuff, but you're not gonna shovel more shit onto me if I didn't do it."
Yeah, that must have been London. I don't remember him saying that.
It must have been London. So, but I thought he was great this week, and I thought Manchester was Manchester and Glasgow were definitely our best two content shows. So I'm really glad that you enjoyed it as well, because the sign is, if Finn, who wrote a magazine for 20 years and, you know, consumes wrestling probably a little bit differently than the majority of the regular audience, if you can get him to enjoy it, then you're on the track. Although I did, the best example I can give is that it was a couple of people who had messaged me and said, "Oh, you know, why didn't you ask me about Montreal or whatever?" And it's like, I think I'm trying to create this indie movie and everyone's just like, "We want the Avengers!" and I'm trying to get that balance. So
yeah, that's it. I mean, you can't win. You know, you're not going to... I mean, I thought it was... When I say that I'm not saying you had an easy night in that, you know, you were phoning it in. What I meant was that he spoke so much and was just so detailed about things that he really, you know, he came through and did what he was supposed to do. You weren't having to prompt him or nudge him into saying things or drag stuff out of him. He was just, you know, he was laying it all bare. So, I mean, that's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really good sign of an actor. He just feels very comfortable in himself. You know what I mean? He doesn't feel like he's... Obviously, he doesn't have anything to prove because he retired back in 2010, but he doesn't feel like he needs to stand there or sit there and say, "Yes, I was the best. I was this. I was that. I was the other. You know, look at me. You know, praise me. You know, write this about me online. And, you know, no, I'm better than this guy. I'm better than that guy." He's very comfortable in his place in history. That was obvious. And that shone through throughout the entire show, Kenny. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I mean, that's lovely that you say that, Finn, but... Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to peel back the curtain here. What Finn was trying to do there was bury me. That was what he was trying to do. And you know, he's long wanted to be known as... He wants to be known as the host of the podcast and for me to be the co-host. He doesn't believe that I should have equal billing on it. Initially, when we were going to do the PowerSlam podcast, he sent me an email where he said that his name had to be 5 times in bigger font than mine was. He's an egomaniac, folks. But he hides it well on here, so that's the main thing. Anyway...
I mean, each week I want to open the podcast and Kenny won't let me. Can you believe that? Each week I want to open it and he won't let me.
Seniority.
So let's move on, Kenny, before we fall out on the air.
Full disclosure, I've not watched a lot of wrestling this week, so you're going to kind of have to, you know, carry me through most of this.
Well, but, I'm used to that, Kenny.
I just got that, you fucker. Anyway, So there's a lot of bits and pieces of news I wanted to talk about. First of all, I think I've kind of decided I'm probably not going to watch the Mixed Match Challenge. And I think it's because at first I was kind of excited about it, but then, and I know this makes me sound like the worst wrestling fan, you know, they're all fighting for a charity.
Yeah.
Like, I just watched some of the videos with the heels and stuff like that, and it's not for me. It's just not for me. I kind of need... to feel like there's something going on. But what I will say is I did see the promo where Asuka and The Miz were cutting a promo for next week, and Asuka starts talking in Japanese and Miz is like startled by it. And it's another example of how great The Miz is, that he just ever so subtly could make that work. But you did get to check it out. Did I miss anything?
Not really, no. The match was Finn Balor and Sasha Banks versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Natalya. I mean, it was a perfectly satisfactory match, but it wasn't really anything that you had to see. It wasn't like, oh, you can't miss it. And I really felt like that first match had to be something special in order for you to make time in your week amongst all the other wrestling that WWE and all the other companies produce. You would be encouraged to make time in your week to watch this every week. And it just sort of felt like just another match. And to me, yeah, the high point was, I wrote this on Facebook, was the promo from The Miz and Asuka to hype the match next week with Big E and Carmella. That to me was the most original and exciting part of the show. Nothing wrong with the match. I mean, you know, Balor and Banks and Nakamura and Natalya, if you put those four people in the ring, they're going to have like a perfectly acceptable match. But there was nothing about it that you absolutely had to see. And what a shame for 205 Live, Kenny. You know, this is eating into 205 Live's time. This is on after SmackDown, and 205 Live has now been shortened to 30 minutes. And as if people needed another reason not to bother with that show, that's on after the mixed match challenge. So,
oh, God. I mean, I know Sondra, you know, our friend Sondra is a big fan of 205 Live, but then she does like baffling things in wrestling, so the thing is, because as we record this, it's Sunday, so depending whether you're listening to this in the main feed or on Patreon, you know, Raw 25 is tomorrow or tonight, and things are kicking into gear with the Royal Rumble and the kind of road to WrestleMania, so yeah, it's going to be tough to hold people's attention for the Mixed Match Challenge, given that it's something that's going to be on every week that's not going to be a sort of linear thing to do with WrestleMania.
Yeah.
There's nothing being built up in that that's going to be paid off. So I think they'll find... I think they might find they need to, you know, throw some more ammunition over there to get people interested in watching. I'd be very curious to know the network numbers in a couple of weeks on... Or even the Facebook numbers on how that's doing.
Yeah, they've definitely got to give people a reason to watch, because there's so much stuff going on right now. Why do you need to watch this? You know, that's the question, isn't it? And there isn't really a reason as far as I can see.
There's not. Now, there has been a lot of news this week going on, Finn. There has been the news that EC3 is no longer part of Impact Wrestling. We've talked about this, that it might be happening, that he's going to leave. And I guess the interesting thing is, somebody has just actually sent me a graphic of something, which I'm going to check the validity of right now. But the rumour is he's going to be in Philadelphia for the Royal Rumble. So I guess my question to you is, I'm going to load like five questions into one here, but do you think that EC3 should debut in the main roster? Do you think he'll still be called EC3? What's your take? What's going to happen with him?
I think he should debut on the main roster. I mean, the guy, let's face it, the guy did his time in NXT back when NXT was a different product to what it is now. So sending him back there again, I don't think he needs to be there. I think he's got a lot of things that WWE likes. I don't know how much of a pop he would get in the Royal Rumble.
It's interesting as well, because if they keep him as EC3, I mean, do you mention what Carter he's involved with, or is it going to be a different Carter?
Well, I mean, the thing is, do they bring him back as Derek Bateman? I mean, would that be the instant kiss of death?
Yeah. Yes, it would. I think,
probably. But would people even remember who Derek Bateman is? Yeah. I don't think they should bring him in as Ethan Carter the Third. I mean, I think now Impact has changed its rules, hasn't it, on ownership of intellectual property and trademarks and what have you. So maybe he will be able to keep the name, because they've sort of changed the rules on that, haven't they, after the Matt Hardy, broken Matt Hardy hoo-ha. Maybe he can come in as Ethan Carter III, but it's hard for me to imagine that they would bring him in under that name, which is almost like a homage to Dixie Carter. It's hard for me to imagine that will happen. I'm not sure what name he's going to use, but I'm finding it difficult to believe that it will be EC3, Ethan Carter the third. I mean, unless, of course, they bring in Dixie in for one night, which, as you mentioned last week, would just be the funniest thing ever.
Do you know what's funny is, like, and I may regret saying this, I don't know if, like, maybe there's something in him being managed by Dixie and her and her being Dixie Carter and just being a sort of older valet, because there's never really been an older valet, and like she could play up that she's this heiress who has loads of money and he's the nephew and, you know, he's been privileged. Like, you can play a lot of that stuff up. And put it this way, if somebody said to me EC3 is going to be in the main roster managed by Dixie Carter, I would be interested and I would tune in to see what happens. So,
I would be as well. I mean, that would be fascinating. That would be like, wow, I would be like, wow, that would be like something from the territories. You know, when someone from the territory came in, it's like, oh, wow, you know, they're from that territory back in the day when they used to really talk about these things. Mm-hmm. You know, almost like, I don't know, obviously it wouldn't be as big as when Eric Bischoff arrived in WWE, would have been then. But it would be sort of something like that. And they could do a lot of things with it.
And she would absolutely do it if she was asked. You know she would.
Oh, yeah. I mean, too right she would. You know, I'm just waiting until you bring her over, Kenny, on her for an inside the ropes tour. I'll tell you what, I'd pay money. I would pay money to watch that. I really would.
Well, the thing is, though, like, it's hard because to me, it's like if you bring over a wrestler or a personality, it's wrestling. They're going to work you while you sit there and listen to them. They're going to. That's what they do. That's what wrestling is.
Yeah.
But there has to be a level of accountability to some stuff or to. And I just don't know she would do it. But I think as a character, I think that she would. I mean, I don't know why, and it goes against all of my sort of, like, my head says do not do it, but her being, like, the valet to EC3, oh, I think it would be really good.
I think so. I mean, as a heel character, I mean, let's face it, there wasn't a lot of love for Dixie, was there, in wrestling? There really wasn't. But as a heel character, I thought she did well. I thought she was pretty good.
And then I would play up real-life stuff. Like, I would have her in, like, a bar, like, with having a glass of red wine, one of the boys, try to, like, you know, recruit him or whatever. Like, just go meta with it. You know, just go the whole hog. So, yeah, I think that could add something to his character.
I really do. I mean, I'm hoping he comes in on the main roster. It just seems like, you know, he's done his time in NXT. He's been in, I think he joined TNA, was it 2013? I think it was 2013 he joined. I think he came in at Bound for Glory that year or just before. So, I mean, he's done, like, what's that? So it's like 4 and a bit years there. And, I mean, I'm not saying he's one of the best performers in the business, but I think he's pretty good. I think he can do a lot of things and I think he can do them well. And you can see he's a guy that, you know, and this has become a weekly feature of the podcast now. You can see that he believes in himself. He knows that he's good and he knows that he can do things. And if he believes that the company is behind him and he's going to give him a shot, I think he will do well in WWE.
As I say, tons of news to talk about. Something else, Goldberg announced as the headline act in the WWE Hall of Fame for 2018. Tell me about Goldberg. If you were still writing Power Slam and you were going to write about Goldberg, is he a Hall of Fame worthy headliner act to go in? Is he, and what do you make, what's the legacy of Goldberg's career, do you think?
I mean, the WWE Hall of Fame is for all of wrestling, isn't it? I mean, we've got people in there like Antonio Inoki, who didn't really do a whole lot in WWF, made very few appearances for the company, but was obviously New Japan owner, biggest star in Japan for many years. So he's absolutely deserving of a place in the WWE Hall of Fame, if it's all of wrestling. I mean, Abdullah the Butcher's in there, and as far as I know, he never worked for WWF. So he's in there, but I mean, Abdullah was a big star. So if you include all of wrestling, then Goldberg, to me, is absolutely deserving of a place. I mean, he was a huge, huge star for WCW. I'm not a massive fan of either his 2003 or 2004 WWE run, or his 2016 to 2017 WWE run. I'm not hugely in awe of either of those. But his WCW run, he was the biggest star in that company. I mean, I saw him live at Nitro in Philadelphia. I think it was March 2nd of 98. I could have the date wrong. It was before WCW was beaten by WWF in the Monday Night War, not Wars, War. And before Raw took over in mid-April of 98. So WCW they were still full of themselves. Yeah, we're ahead. We're number one, all this type of thing. So I saw Goldberg there. It's sold out venue. And he was the most overact in that building that night, Kenny. And it was quite something to see live. It was like, I'm not saying it was quite as big as Davey Boy Smith at Wembley Stadium in SummerSlam 1992, but it wasn't that far off. And Goldberg, as everyone knows, was the guy in WCW in 1998. Obviously, WCW, things started going very badly for the company in 1999, even worse in 2000, and then it ceased to exist in 2001. So he was a huge star. So I feel he is deserving of a place in the Hall of Fame, because he was such a big deal admittedly for a short time. So I absolutely endorsed the decision for him to go in there. I believe he was considered for a spot in the Hall of Fame at the Atlanta WrestleMania, which would have been, I think, the 2011 one. I think there was talk that he was going to go in then. And from what I recall, Triple H, who at that point was still an enemy of Goldberg's, because Goldberg was still on the WWE enemies list. It was shot down in flames. Nah, he's not worthy. He doesn't deserve it. So
I can understand that, because, you know, I don't know if Goldberg is as worthy as Coco Beware.
Yeah. I mean, when you get into it, it's just like, you know, you just your head starts spinning if you start thinking about it too much. But that was obviously based upon him not being in the good graces with the company, which he now is. And there's obviously a lot of that contributes to the decisions of who goes in. Everyone knows that, Kenny. I'm stating the bleeding obvious. So, yeah, I like it. I mean, I endorse the decision for him to go in. I mean, you know, I was a fan of him in his day. I mean, I thought he was not a great performer. I felt he was a guy that what he needed a few New Japan tours, and things needed to happen. And I think he could have been a lot better in the ring than he was. But the problem was, he was such a big star and people were so accustomed to him doing these short matches that there was never really that sort of pressure on him to ever become a better in-ring performer. So that was my only thing that I was disappointed about with Goldberg, was I think he was a guy who could have become better than he was. But it was like he didn't have a reason to be, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I will defend his 2016-2017 run. I think the Goldberg story was really good. There wasn't great kind of matches out of it, but I thought the WrestleMania match this year was pretty exciting. So good for him being in there. Much deserved. So I just want to read you a list, if you don't mind. And get your thoughts on it. I'm going to read you the confirmed, as of now, names that will be appearing at Raw 25. I need to kind of brace myself to have to say this all at once. Okay, here we go. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Brother Love, Eric Bischoff, Harvey Whippleman, Howard Finkel, Jerry Lawler, Jim Ross, Coach, JBL, John Laurinaitis, Lillian Garcia, Teddy Long, Terry Runnels, the Bella Twins, the Boogeyman, the Brooklyn Brawler, Chris Jericho, Christian, D-Generation X of Shawn Michaels and Triple H, the Dudley Boys, the Godfather, Jacqueline, Kelly Kelly, Maria Kanellis, Michelle McCool, MVP, the New Age Outlaws, Ric Flair, Ron Simmons, Scott Hall, Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, Tori Wilson, Trish Stratus, Undertaker, William Regal, Brock Lesnar, John Cena. Are there too many?
Probably. I think Kevin Nash isn't on there because he's just had a knee operation. So, you know.
Yeah, he's there's one down. But I guess the question is kind of twofold for you. What would you like to see from this Raw at Raw 25? And, you know, out of all those names I've mentioned, if you had to pick a handful that you'd like to see kind of involved in something, is there anybody?
Yeah, well, Steve Austin, we haven't seen him on Raw for a while. I mean, I'm presuming he'll get a pretty big spot. I think a lot of those people will just be shown very briefly backstage. I mean, what are they going to do with Kelly Kelly, you know?
Set her on fire.
Yeah, but seriously, it's like, I mean, you know, the Bella Twins are on that list. And I've not the Bella Twins in the past, but I would just like to acknowledge that they are now very important parts of the WWE system as the stars of Total Bellas and as cast members of Total Divas.
Oh, look at it. You can hear it coming out now. He's a fan.
What a U-turn. It's like I'm a member of the Conservative Party, you know. So
I thought you were going to call yourself a member of the Bella Army. I was going to just cry with laughter.
No, but what I mean is that I'm still not really a fan of the characters. What I mean is, because they're part of those shows are successful. They do generate a lot of income for WWE TV revenue. So they are a very important part of the system by not being on screen in the ring. So they've found their niche in WWE, which is not being in WWE, which is certainly not to knock them or anything like that, because they're making a hell of a lot more money for the company now than they ever have. So, you know, good for them. And I'm sure they like that. It means they're not taking bumps and things like that, and they get to live their lives how they want to live them. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that they're ever going to get back in the ring and really have full-time careers again, because why would they? Why would they want to go back to that? But there's a lot of people on that list, like Michelle McCool, for instance. Was that? Did you say Michelle McCool?
Yep, she's going to be there.
Michelle McCool, I mean, what is it? It's 2011 she retired, I think it was. So, I mean, like, who's going to recognize her? You know what I mean? It's like, she wasn't really that memorable anyway. So, I mean, there's a lot of people on that list that I would think are just going to be featured in fleeting segments backstage. So I would think the big stars are going to get some real time, like Steve Austin, for instance, will get a segment. I'm not sure exactly what he's going to do, but it doesn't matter. He can just go through his routine, and it's a long time since people have seen it in a WWE arena, so it'll go down a storm. Presumably Chris Jericho will get some time, although, you know, he's kind of now doing stuff in New Japan, but he's well in with the McMahons, so that's going to be an interesting one to see how much time he gets, because he's sort of committed now to doing other things outside WWE, so maybe his role will be fleeting also. But there's too many people to do anything meaningful with. But I mean, as long as the real big stars or the real players like Undertaker and Cena, presumably there's going to be some hint of their match at WrestleMania. I mean, Shawn Michaels and Triple H are going to get some time because, of course, they're Shawn Michaels and Triple H. So I think the big stars will get decent sized segments or decent length segments. And the also rans, it'll be just like the old days where we'll just be like, you know, blink and you'll miss them type thing. So,
my favorite thing was when we were in London in the Shawn Michaels tour, I said, you know, you're going to be at Raw 25 on Monday and blah, blah, blah. And then he said to me on stage, he just said, oh, where am I going to be? Manhattan Center or Barclays? He was asking me where he's going to be. And I said, I don't really know, Sean. You might need to give him a call. And he said, oh, I just show up and that's it. So, yeah. But no, what would you like to, because I made a point in the last kind of 2 weeks or so of watching the Raw 15th anniversary, the Raw 1000. Is there any hope for you for the show? Is your hope that it's not just legends beating down new guys kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's got to be some nostalgia. I hope there's maybe about, I think 50-50, I'd like 50% nostalgia, because that's, I mean, a lot of people are going to be watching this for nostalgia purposes. This is going to attract a lot of lapsed fans back who want to watch the characters that they used to watch when they were fans. So I'm hoping there's going to be quite a lot for those fans, but also quite a lot for the current roster who can possibly appeal to the lapsed fans. That's the whole purpose of this, isn't it? Is to try and retain, makes, you know, try and bring back some of those lapsed fans. So I'm hoping we're going to get some indications at least of what we can expect at WrestleMania. I'm not quite sure how they're going to follow up what happened on Monday with Braun Strowman and what had happened with Brock Lesnar and Kane the previous week when they were supposedly crushed by that Trust Tower. So they're going to have to do something there. Presumably, Brock and Kane are going to, you know, come back swinging, and Braun's going to be back pedaling. I'm not really sure there, but there's going to, I mean, that was such a huge part of Raw this week, wasn't it? Braun Strowman's actions in the first hour, mm-hmm. that's going to have to get some time. So there's going to be that. And yeah, just hoping that the current crowd, aren't squashed by Bradshaw and Farouk or something like that, just like the old days, that some of the, you know, modern, current roster members get something juicy to work on that can potentially make some of those Laps fans that are coming back for the evening to see Steve Austin and The Undertaker and, oh, Michelle McCool, of course, they can become fans. They can become fans of the current crowd. That's what I'm hoping for from the show. What are you hoping for from it, Kenny? You're going to be there, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be
which
in Manhattan.
Do you know which venue you're going to be at?
Oh, listen, I would not be going if I wasn't going to the Manhattan Center. That's where
that's where you'd be going.
Bucket list thing. When I remember watching WWF Mania as a kid, and they would show clips from Raw, and I just never thought I'd go to them. The last time the WWF ran Manhattan Center for a televised event, do you remember?
Oh, I've no idea. Would it have been 95?
It was the February 1997 episode of Raw where ECW turned up.
Oh, that, of course, that's right, yeah, that's right, yeah, I remember, yeah, I remember,
Shamrock in the crowd and all that kind of stuff, so, I do love the idea there's Michelle McCool fans, she's back, we need to go and watch! but I'm really excited for the show, I mean, obviously I'm going, I think it's a nice touch, they're going to have JR and King doing the commentary at the Manhattan Center. You know, we've got Roman Reigns and The Miz for the IC title is going to be there. We'll just talk about it now, actually, but rather than talk about it for Raw. The Revival cut a promo, and what I want to see is I want to see The Revival beating up some legends. That's what I want. I do not want to see a rehash of The Ascension from January 2015, where they just got murdered by like five teams because, I mean, The Ascension were pretty crap, right? So it's not really the biggest. But The Revival are really, really good.
What an awful year. What an awful year those two guys are coming off of.
Yeah, but the promo they cut did not strike me as the sort of promo that you're to feed them to people.
No, definitely not. After the year they had in 2017, the last thing they need is to be treated like The Ascension were at the show that you just mentioned. Absolutely.
Exactly.
I'd be nice to see The Revival say if they can take a beating to beat down JBL and Farouk. If those two guys can take a beating, that would be good to see.
Yeah, for sure. And then also, The Undertaker is there. I did ask around the last couple of days because I wanted to get the... Because there's been one piece of information that I think we've been kind of like unsure on, and that's whether he got the hip surgery that he was talking about. And I asked a sort of very reputable person, and he did get the hip surgery last year.
Right.
He did get it in New York. So it strikes me as, if he's coming back, he must think he can do it. So I hope the angle with him is good. The way I imagine they're going to do it is that I think the Manhattan Center will have all the legends, apart from, I think, Barclays Center will have Cena, Lesnar, and Austin. That's how I would imagine they're going to do it. And the other good thing about it is with the Women's Royal Rumble coming up, you can have some of these former women, put themselves in the Rumble.
Well, Michelle McCool, I mean, just watch those network numbers soar.
I'm really excited about the show, so I think there's definitely potential.
Can I just ask you, who do you think is going to win in the Roman Reigns versus Miz match? Are you predicting title change, Kenny?
I am. I think the Miz is going to regain his Intercontinental Championship on that show. I just have a feeling I think Roman Reigns has done okay this time as IC champ. I don't think it's not anywhere near as bad when he was the US champ last year or 2 years ago. I think he's done pretty well. The matches with Samoa Joe and that have been really fun. So, but if Roman's going to be going to war, I always think the IC title suffers the most when someone just has it and doesn't really want it.
Yes, I agree.
And post Royal Rumble, he's going to want to be going for the Universal title. So,
Yeah, I'm predicting title change as well. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? It absolutely makes sense. And when Miz is champion, it's a big thing to him. I mean, he really promotes the significance of the IC title, which is something that Roman Reigns really hasn't done. It does feel a bit redundant on Roman.
Yeah, absolutely. It does feel a bit redundant. what else are I going to say? Yeah, no, I think the show has got a lot of potential. And they've got this, usually with the Royal Rumble, people come back anyway, but I think they're going to have a lot of eyes come back to watch this show.
Yes.
So to me, you want to use your nostalgia to enhance your current stuff. And
could not agree more, Kenny.
So, you know, and obviously your man, Big Match John's going to be there, so at least you'll be happy.
Well, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, I talked last week, I'm just going to keep this brief. I talked last week about the Cena versus Undertaker match, and I think it could be something, I think the hype for it could be something quite special. So if that is...
Because like you said, to bring up something you brought up last week, which is a very good point, of Cena can't pull his quacky-dacky shit with Undertaker.
No, he can't. He can't do any of that.
So he's going to have to really bring it. And I'm curious whether Undertaker, you know, because we know so little about the guy, does he feel he has a point to prove here? You know, does he feel like, is he hearing what people were saying last year about, you know, oh, well, it was so sad to see how he turned out. Like, I'm curious about, is he just coming back for another paycheck for, you know, for WrestleMania? Or does he want to prove that he can still go? Because why put yourself through hip surgeries and all that? You know, the guy's set for life financially. So I'm curious of Undertaker's motivations, is what I'd say.
Yeah, I think I can't imagine that he wants to leave it like he did last year. But I mean, if you think about it, his last match that really sizzled, that really rocked at WrestleMania, was with CM Punk in 2013. That was the last WrestleMania match that was really, you know, worthy of him, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've said before that I quite enjoyed the Lesnar match, and I thought technically it was well done, but it just didn't have the atmosphere, and that's what let it down. And everything after that has just felt a bit sort of irrelevant, really, like as if you were just, oh, we need to give him a spot on the show. What's he going to do? It sort of had that feel to it. Whereas the Cena, I mean, that last year, I mean, the Reigns match should have been something, but it really wasn't. So, I mean, Cena's got the pedigree, he's been around forever, and this is a match that...
Also, Cena's got something to prove, because he had the match with AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble last year, which was tremendous, and then he had a pretty much, you know, clanger of a 2017.
Yeah.
So both of them kind of have a point to prove going into this. And also, WWE have released a video package on their YouTube channel and across their social media of, like, you know, 25 years of The Undertaker on Raw. And, you know, if you watch that video, they do not release that video unless he's coming back to do a match. You know, it's pretty much all but set in stone.
Yeah, definitely. And if that match doesn't happen, then, you know, WrestleMania this year could feel, you know, it might not feel really that big. I mean, if we've got Lesnar, Roman Reigns, which everyone says we have, we've been there before. It's not an original match. It's fairly easy to predict who's going to win. I mean, we're not sure what Ronda Rousey's going to do. I mean, there's all sort of rumours. Have you heard the rumours circulating about some mixed tag match? That's the latest one. Have you heard that one?
Well, yeah. So I'd heard about this, and I asked somebody, George, actually, in our Facebook community, I said, you know, where did that rumour come from? And it came from a guy running a Facebook page about old-school wrestling. And I said, you know, the thing is, like, for me, it's like, I have set people who I will listen to if a story pops up, right?
Yeah.
So if Dave Meltzer or Mike Johnson at PW Insider or Ryan Satin at Pro Wrestling Sheet, even though I'm not crazy in some of the ways he reports stuff, but I do respect him as the stories that he breaks, and he does get them right. And there's a couple other Twitter accounts that have broken stuff. If I hear it from somebody like that, I'll take some credence in the story, but if you're running a Facebook page and you're just fantasy booking and passing it off as rumours, I mean, you should really not be allowed in Facebook, to be honest, because it's not what you're there for, you know?
No, I shouldn't have even really brought that one up.
I'm glad you did bring it up, because some people would have thought that is a legitimate thing. So it's good that we can kind of talk about it and go, maybe it is something in the plan. I mean, I would imagine if Ronda Rousey's coming in, she's in the Rumble. you know.
I'm sure she is. I mean, that's that. You know, I was just sort of bringing that up because that's something that's floating around out there. Until it's actually confirmed what she's doing, then there'll be all sorts of other things floating around out there as well. So, but I mean, you know, you could see why someone would put that one together as a fantasy idea, because obviously Triple H and Braun Strowman are doing something. I'm imagining that Triple H will be involved in the three-way match at Royal Rumble in some way to set up his match with Braun at WrestleMania, which has got to, that's inevitable. That's coming for sure. And obviously we had the Ronda versus Stephanie thing a few years ago, but you know, so you can see how someone would put that together as a match.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see how.
Now, let me ask you, are you, you know, because Braun Strowman obviously is wreaking havoc, and then I'm going to kind of tie this in. It's from Raw, but I feel like it's just for just this part of it. You know, all the Braun stuff happens, and Stephanie's the one to, you know, unfire him kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a sign that we are leading to Braun and Triple H at WrestleMania? And are you interested in that match as one of the sort of premier matches at the show?
Well, I mean, if you go back to Survivor Series and what happened at Survivor Series and what happened at Raw the next night, it seems fairly obvious to me that that is a match that's going to occur at WrestleMania. I mean, there was talk, wasn't there, for quite some time that it was going to be Triple H versus Kurt Angle. That's not going to happen. You can see that that's just been, that idea has been scrapped. If that was ever really a serious idea, and that might have just been somebody, something that, you know, was talked about once, you know, at the Shawn Michaels show, he brought this up, didn't he? Where he was saying that, you know, oftentimes people would say, oh, yeah, you were supposed to do this at that particular WrestleMania. It's like, well, I've got no knowledge of that. It's like, well, there'll be these conversations that take place where people will suggest things. And yes, it might be talked about, but that doesn't mean that it was ever likely to happen. So it could have been the same with Triple H and Kurt Angle, which was something that everyone was talking about last year as a potential or dead cert for WrestleMania this year. So that's it's got to be Triple H, Braun Strowman. It's got to be WrestleMania this year. So I'm figuring something's going to happen at the Rumble to really trigger that, because Lesnar's got to win. He's got to retain the title at Royal Rumble. And maybe Braun will be taken out by Triple H, although quite how Braun can even be taken out at this point, Kenny. How can he be realistically taken out after what we've seen from him? What's Triple H going to do? The sledgehammer's not going to get it done, is it, Kenny?
No, but maybe it's going to be Michael Cole. Maybe Michael Cole's had enough of being pushed around, and he's going to run. Wouldn't it be tremendous just for one second if Michael Cole tried to run at the Royal Rumble to get to Braun, and Braun just chucked him again? Launched them. It would be so funny. So funny.
Yeah, definitely. But to get back to you, yeah, I am looking forward to this match, because Triple H is on board with the Strowman push. There's no way Strowman is losing that match. Braun's going to defeat Triple H, and that puts him in a really good spot for the post-WrestleMania season. And they've really got to think about, you know, what they're going to do with Braun. You know, are they going to give him a title? Are they going to, he's kind of in this tweener role. Are they going to turn him face? And, you know, after he's beaten Triple H, that puts him in a elevated position to where he is now, if that's possible. And maybe he could become something other than what he is now. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the match, because I think it'd be good for Braun.
Moving on from that, there's, let's talk about the shiter, first of all. I didn't get a chance to watch SmackDown. You did. Bobby Roode's the new US champion. Not much else seemed to happen. No Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens on the show. How was this episode?
Yeah, it just felt like the sort of episode you didn't need to see. It was sort of like a little bit like the mixed match challenge that followed. I mean, there was nothing on it that was really that bad. It was dominated by the US title tournament. Jinder Mahal defeated Xavier Woods. Match was all right. Typical sort of Jinder match. Typical, if you didn't see it, you didn't miss much. Mahal won. In fact, I've written here in my notes, painfully average. So definitely don't need to see that one.
Mm-hmm. Is there any part of SmackDown Live from this week that you would say, Kenny, you need to go back and watch this?
Well, not really, no. I mean, it was just, it all just seemed like, you know, we had the Mojo Rawley versus Bobby Roode US title tournament match, and Roode won that, of course. And then they had the Singh brothers run in and beat down Roode. Actually, as far as the Roode versus Rawley match, I described that as frustratingly mediocre in my notes. So Singh brothers out to attack Roode, and then Roode challenged Mahal to have the title match, the final match that night. Mahal's like, no, I'm not having it tonight. Then Daniel Bryan came out and said, yes, the match is taking place tonight. That match took place later. Of course, Bobby Roode won. The match was really quite flat in the beginning, did pick up towards the end. Of course, Roode won. It just sort of felt like the whole show was just based around the US title tournament. And it's sort of, you got the feeling afterwards that you just couldn't wait to get it over with. That was the impression I got. It's like, this tournament is really not going to be remembered fondly. Let's just finish it tonight and we can move on. That was the impression I got from WWE.
The other thing is the fear that I... So Bobby Roode's the US champion. It's like, oh, okay, whatever. But also, we all know that Dolph Ziggler's going to come back and they're going to do champion versus champion, and it makes me want to tear my hair out, Finn.
Oh, well, I mean, how many times did we have to put up with Dolph Ziggler versus Bobby Roode last year? And I think the final match they had was actually all right, but like some of the other matches were just like, they were just like, oh, spare me. Just end this match. You know, bring someone else out, please. I'm going to turn this off. I guess the most significant thing on the show was that after Roode had won with the Glorious DDT to become the new US champion, Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan were there. They had both endorsed Roode. I mean, they made a big deal of it on commentary that, you know, it was a united front from Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. So that was sort of that storyline that's been the lead storyline on SmackDown was almost sort of, disabled. You know, it was almost like, right, let's just forget about that storyline now. We'll worry about that next week as well while we get this US title tournament out of the way. And it just felt like it was just put on hold. So I'm not quite sure where that's going. So there's nothing to see there either in terms of Bryan versus Shane, in terms of any advancement to that. In fact, it felt like regression, really. So to answer your question, Kenny, you don't need to see SmackDown.
So there's been a very interesting interview that was published today, and I am very bad at pronunciation of this, but Alberto El Patron spoke to Mediotiempo.com, which is a Spanish website, Spanish language website anyway. And he mentioned in the interview that he has apologized to Triple H for comments made about him last year. He said, I apologize to Triple H and the issues that we had when I was with my relationship with my former spouse. She and her entire family made me believe that those who affected our relationship were them, specifically him, being Triple H, and he hopes to return to the WWE in 2019 before he retires the following year. He said, it'd be very difficult to return in 2018, but in 2019 before I go, I will definitely do something with them. We shook hands and all is well. Time heals the wounds. He is saying this while he is under contract to Impact Wrestling and is on their show. What do you make of this? Do you think that, is there anything for Del Rio / Patron to do? Is there one last run left in him? Is there any interest in that? What do you make of his comments?
I guess he's just trying to set things up for the future. Maybe he's trying to up his price tag in Impact Wrestling. I don't think there's anything left for him in WWE. His last run there was just like so forgettable. Supposedly he was paid very handsomely for that. It's like, what the hell did he contribute to that company? I have no idea what he contributed. Left in 2016 under a black cloud. I don't think there's anything left for him in WWE. I guess he's just trying to get his things in place to try and set himself up potentially for a comeback. And if he has any fans, presumably he has some fans somewhere who might then be urging WWE to re-sign him. Maybe he thinks he can get something going in that regard. And like, if there's enough people clamoring for his comeback, for a comeback, then maybe WWE would be inclined to make him a low offer. But I just don't feel like there's anything left for him to do in WWE. And I think WWE, there's like 50 people he'd rather push than him. So no, I don't see it happening. What do you think, Kenny?
It's funny. I think he's actually had, I think there is parts of him that's a nice guy, and I think he's got some issues and stuff as well. But yeah, I just don't think it would happen. You know, the last time he came back, he stumbled in with that, you know, turd of a human, Kalisto. So I just don't think it's going to get any better this time. So, but no. it'll be interesting, no. I guess, if he does.
I mean, it'd be good for him. I mean, he makes some money out of it, but
yeah, great.
I mean, again, it's like, I mean, not that you really expect anyone to treat Impact with any respect. So it's a bit of an insult to Impact Wrestling, really, isn't it? Just normal now.
Apparently Bret Hart is really hoping that the Hart Foundation are going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, mainly for Jim Neidhart, because he's got quite bad health issues at the moment, and if it doesn't come now, the thought is that he might not be able to enjoy it and actually get on stage. The Hart Foundation, do you think would it be good to put them in the Hall of Fame? Is that something they should look into, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's sort of like Bret's probably thinking, well, Ric Flair went in by himself and then he went in with the Horsemen. So, you know, I'm the best there is, the best there was and the best there ever will be. So why can't I go in twice as well? That's probably what's motivating him here. Actually, that's probably a cynical comment. It's pretty cynical, isn't it? I mean, Jim Neidhart to me was a guy he's not a Hall of Fame guy. He just isn't. I mean, you could say, oh, he's a bigger star than Coco Beware. Of course he was. I mean, Bret was the star of the Hart Foundation. I mean, Hart Foundation were a pretty big act. I mean, they were 2-time WWF tag team champions. You know, obviously there's Jim's continuing stardom as, Natalia's tenant in the house that Natalia's bought for Jim. And, you know, he's had a lot of problems since he retired. Jim, everyone knows about that. I mean, you hope that he's doing all right now. I mean, if Bret's doing this for the right reasons, I apologize for what I just said then. If Bret is doing it for that reason, then that would be a nice thing to do for Jim. But to me, it doesn't really feel like something that needs to happen. It doesn't feel like, it almost would feel like almost like a charity thing, if you know what I mean, rather than something that sort of needs to happen. I think Jim, you know, with his appearances on Total Divas and stuff, I think he's, for a guy that was never really, was somebody that was always, you know, Bret was always the star of the Hart Foundation tag team back in the day. Jim was a guy that sort of looked out getting a great partner like Bret. So, I mean, Jim's a guy that's, I think probably the system has probably done a lot for him, he's probably got, in a way, more out of the wrestling system than he put in. I think there's probably people that are more deserving than him to go into the Hall of Fame. But I just want to say again that if Bret's doing this for the right reasons, then, you know, good on Bret for doing that. And you know, that's up to them, you know, it sort of feels like something that doesn't feel like something that, like last year, for instance, Rock and Roll Express were inducted into the Hall of Fame, and they briefly wrestled for WWF due to WWF's relationship with Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but they were never a WWF act. They were a Jim Crockett Promotions act, and they wrestled for other territories as well. And to me, Rock and Roll Express absolutely were deserving of a place in the Hall of Fame because they were an amazing tag team. To me, if you look at the Hart Foundation, Bret's already in there. So he's the one that's really Hall of Fame worthy. So I don't know. It's a tough one, really. It sort of feels like something that doesn't feel like it's something that's a natural decision. Would almost feel like something that WWE or Vince McMahon was sort of, oh, you need to do it for these reasons, not for the right reasons. Do you see what I mean, Kenny?
Yeah, 100%. I do want to ask you very quickly before we finish off by talking about Raw. The announcement of Chris Jericho in Raw 25 I thought was really interesting because we talked, you know, we waxed lyrical here about the Omega and Jericho match at Wrestle Kingdom. And it's kind of interesting because Jericho then set up the thing with Naito in New Japan. It appears he is going to have more matches there. But he's going to be on Raw 25. But the weird thing is that Jericho has not had this new character be on WWE TV, and I would be very surprised if he's going to go out there and be a nostalgia act and bring the list out and all that sort of stuff. What do you think he's going to do on this show? What Chris Jericho are we going to get on this show?
Well, I mean, that's a character that he's playing in New Japan, isn't it? And, you know, the majority of people that are going to be watching Raw 25 won't be aware of it. I mean, the people that are New Japan fans and watch Wrestle Kingdom 12, I mean, that only represents a tiny percentage of people who will be watching Raw on Monday. So I think he's really going to have to play the character that they know him for. So I'm expecting him to come out with a list and do what he was doing last year. That's what I'm expecting.
I can't see him doing it, but I don't know what he would do. He feels like the sort of guy that doesn't want to go back again.
I mean, I can see that. It's hard for me to imagine, since it doesn't seem like Chris is going to be doing a match at WrestleMania this year because he's got the New Japan thing going on.
And he's also doing a US Fozzy tour, and they have a gig the day of WrestleMania.
Okay. So, and plus he's doing that wrestling cruise thing as well, isn't he, later in the year?
Yeah, in October.
Yeah, so he's doing that. So, I mean, for me, I don't know whether Jericho's going to get a particularly large segment on the show, because what real purpose would that serve for WWE? To me, it would be, he's a guy that's sort of going along. I can't see him really doing a whole lot on the show because he's not going to be setting anything up. And I think the people who are going to be doing things on the show, I mean, probably if he comes out, maybe he'll do something with Austin. Maybe he'll come out, they'll have a bit of banter, and Austin will nail him with a stunner. Maybe that'll be his role. But I think he's going to be going out there playing the same character that he was playing in WWE last year, because the majority of people watching won't be aware of the new character that he's created for himself in New Japan.
There you go. And just to kind of finish us off, Raw this week, what were the highlights, and what was the overall vibe going into Raw 25 tomorrow?
Well, the thing that everyone's talking about was, of course, the Braun Strowman rampage, where they opened the show with their footage from the previous week when Strowman used the grappling hook to pull the truss tower down, and, you know, Brock Lesnar had to leave in an ambulance, and poor Kane had to leave under his own steam. We covered that last week. And then Braun was unapologetic, you know, showed no remorse for his conduct. And then Angle fired him. And at this point, you know, Braun was there, you know, didn't seem bothered in any way. He was just angry. You knew those poor security guys who were escorting him out of the building were going to get beaten up. And sure enough, they did do. You know, later on, Braun's like, he's in an Angle's office. He's like, fire me. I'll show you. Then he trashed Angle's office. Then he announced that he was going to the production trucks, which were worth, what did he say? Was it $12 million?
$12 million.
$12 million. So it was quite funny when he got into the production trucks, because all he did was throw some pieces of paper around and someone's coat, and that was it. So that amused me greatly. So Kurt Angle came around, tried to calm him down, and then Braun tipped. He apparently drove the truck part, detached the truck from the trailer, that was the production truck trailer, drove it, about 15 feet, then got out and tried to tip the truck over. Angle's trying to reason with him, and then Braun's just not listening to reason, and then he tipped the truck over. Now, I counted 18 cuts in the footage of Braun tipping the truck over. It was like sensory overload. I mean, it was just like, what is this? So, and then Kurt's there. He's saying to him, I've spoken, you know, he gets a call from Stephanie McMahon. And then Braun storms onto the stage. And this was where the real humor began. He could tip over this like 18-wheeler truck thing, but he had major trouble lifting Michael Cole. I mean, that was just one of the funniest, you know, unintentional comedy moments in Raw history, I felt. You know, what do you think, Kenny?
Oh, what was so funny about it was is that what everybody was talking about, because I'd heard about it before I saw it, kind of thing. The one gif that I saw on Twitter was just, with no context, remember, I've not seen this yet, and all I see is Braun Strowman chucking Michael Cole off the stage into a bunch of people. And I just kind of nodded to myself and I went, things are going okay. Things are fine. We're good. And then I go watch some clips and I see that, like, you know, he can, like, he can get down a rigging thing with no problem, but Michael Cole, him with dead weight is just a little bit too much for Braun. But this was great. Like, him in the production truck, like, what does this button do? And like, I'm not finished with you yet. And he's eating cake and catering, and he's trying to knock over the production truck, and he's throwing Michael Cole off the stage and all this sort of stuff. It's just, it's so good. It's classic, and it does so much more for him than him wrestling a 5-minute match. So
I think, the argument to that is that it was just really comedy, and that this is supposed to be a serious thing, and it was just sort of, the whole thing was just so over the top and ludicrous.
It does seem like it kind of works for him, though.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he does. I mean, you know, there I was, you know, in the awards section, I was complimenting Braun for the bin truck angle. And when you think about it, it was no more ridiculous than that. In fact, less when you think about it. So, I mean, apparently there was loads of complaints online from parents about this, because Braun had, like, done this awful thing on the previous week's show. Then there was consequences for his actions. And then he acted even worse. Mm-hmm. And at the end of all that, he was then rehired. So apparently WWE received a load of complaints from parents. You know, it's like rules and boundaries. You know, if a child does something wrong, he or she needs to be disciplined and shown there are consequences for his or her actions. And here WWE demonstrated that there were consequences to Braun's actions the previous week, but when he misbehaved even worse, he was rewarded.
Can I just say, punished. I hate when parents pull this shit. It's your job to parent your kids, not WWE.
Exactly. Like, I mean, if you're relying on WWE...
You're relying on Vince McMahon to raise your children.
You know, yeah, if you're relying on WWE to show your child right from wrong, you need to book yourself on a course of parenting classes.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that stuff's ridiculous. It's like, I used to watch WWF. I mean, when I was like 12, you know, or 11, I was watching the Attitude Era. And, you know, if you have a good relationship with your parents, you can turn around and say, what's that all about? And they'll tell you. It's, you know, Braun Strowman. Anyway. Anything else on Raw you want to talk about quickly before we ride off into the sunset?
Yeah, just want to quickly mention the main event,
Rollins and Balor, that was great. The return of the curb stomp, Finn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was like a really good match. I mean, and at first it was like the fans really weren't getting into it, but I mean, the match was so damn good that they were just like, wow, you know, by the end of it, they were gripped. You know, this was big. Also, Booker had another moment in there as well, where he was talking about something to do with Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle and favoritism and nepotism. And Corey Graves just cut him dead again. This was after the Ken Shamrock thing. So Booker had a bit of a rough night. Actually, Corey Graves was all over him on Raw.
Quite right.
Yeah, and quite right too. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, Michael Cole, after he was thrown onto the security guards, he was replaced by Tom Phillips. So I think Corey really had felt like he needed to step up there, because Tom's not very exciting, let's face it. He just sort of fills time, doesn't he, really? He doesn't say anything of any great consequence. So I think Corey just sort of felt, I need to step up here. I need to lead this. And he absolutely did. So, yeah, fans were slow to respond to Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor, but they really got into it at the end. And, wow, that finisher. What they call it? I think are they calling it the Blackout? Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, they're calling it the Blackout, which was originally the name for the move before it became the Curb Stomp.
Yeah, and what? I mean, the execution and the sell job by Finn was absolutely phenomenal. It could not have been better. The thing I liked about it even more, Kenny, was after the match, after Rollins had won, Balor sold it for so long and he could hardly stand up, and Carl Anderson and
Luke Gallows
were there trying to prop him up, and it was just like, and they spent a long time, they really lingered on that to really emphasize how devastating this move was. And that was so unlike WWE. So unlike WWE, where guys, after they've taken a move, are just like, up, out of the ring, next. You know, that's the attitude there, isn't it? And it just, like, you know, allow us to suspend our disbelief here allow us to believe that this stuff hurts. And if we can believe that, we're going to get into it more. You know, allow the guys and the women to sell so that this really does look devastating. And yeah, I thought it was a tremendous end to the show. Really, like, you know, old school pro wrestling, you know. Sorry, Vince, for bringing that up.
Yeah, so as we just kind of ride off into the sunset, I do just want to say my highlights from Raw, because I did watch it back. The Braun Strowman stuff I thought was excellent. I thought that Asuka and Nia Jax was money. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I will echo those sentiments. That was a really good match, yeah.
I thought the Revival's promo really made them players, which they hadn't really been before, given that, you know, the terrible kind of year they had with injuries last year.
Yeah, we're not sports entertainers. We're professional wrestlers, you know, and they were saying, you know, Attitude Era isn't old school. You know, if you think that's old school, you don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah, that was really good too.
And then the main event, Balor and Rollins, was great. Balor and the club are looking more legitimate. Jason Jordan is great in his role, as always. And, yeah, just... Raw's really firing on a lot of cylinders right now, so it's good stuff. And I think Raw 25 tomorrow has the potential to be great. I really hope that they have everything kind of, you know, tomorrow they're going to have everything timed to perfection. You know, absolutely. And I know that on the network they're doing a one-hour pre-show for the Raw. I think it's Renee Young and Sam Roberts and Pete Rosenberg. And you know, maybe put some of the legends on that. You know, maybe you know, free up some time on the main show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should be fun. And I'm going out to New York for it, so we're probably not going to get a chance to podcast about it till Friday or so. But we will be talking at length, Finn, about Raw 25, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to the show, really looking forward to it. It's I think it's going to tick a lot of boxes, or at least I hope it does.
Big shoes to fill. Well, Finn, if people want to find you and just say hello or tell you how much they love Power Slam or... you know, give you the 10 reasons why John Cena is the greatest wrestler in the history of the world, where can they find you?
Yeah, or criticise me for being horrible about Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. I feel, it's not often I say things on this show that I feel bad about, but I kind of feel bad about saying that. So, you know, once again, apologise if, you know, if I'm being cynical.
I've said a lot worse, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, they can find me at finleymartin.co.uk or on Twitter at finleymartin or at PowerSlam Online. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 or inside_the ropes. We have a very big announcement, or two actually, coming up. One about a certain man who has been mentioned on this podcast who is coming to the United Kingdom with Inside the Ropes this year. And another announcement which is very exciting that I can't wait to share, and we will be able to share both of those announcements before the end of January. So thanks for all your support. Thanks to everybody who bought a ticket to Shawn Michaels and came out and saw us. We, you know, great response, great reception, packed houses every single night, and here is to 100 more. So Finn, thanks again as always for your time.
And thank you, Kenny. And yeah, have fun in the States, and really look forward to our next podcast recording.
Our next podcast marathon coming up later on this week. So thank you very much, everybody. We hope you have a great weekend, and we will see you down the road. Take care. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.